We're back. We're back for season three.
Season three of Share the Air.
Yeah, we're back with a slightly unconventional or just different format than previous seasons. We're not going to post an episode every week for a number of weeks in a row. We're going to try and do a little more spread out, maybe some more time in between. Not as consistent, just to make it possible for us to do this season with everything else that we have going on.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think everyone is well aware that the club season is now underway, but we still want to be putting out episodes and having these conversations, and we already have a couple of great conversations lined up. We're just exploring new episode formats and new things to try, some of it based on feedback from our listeners that we got in our off-season break, and part of that is giving us a little bit more time to develop and have conversations with more folks. So hopefully this time helps us do that.
Yeah. So if you have anyone you want us to talk to this season, we have linked in all of our social media platforms a guest nomination form that you could go and fill out, and we'll check that and hopefully get the voices that you want to hear on here.
Yeah. You can nominate yourself, nominate a teammate, a person you respect in the community. The more voices that we can get on the show, the better. And we only know so many people, so we appreciate our listeners letting us know who we should talk to.
Yes, and we did a bonus episode kind of about kicking off the club season and where both of our teams are at. So if you want to check that out, you can do that on our Patreon. But Brute Squad, my team, has our first tournament this weekend, and Lou's team, Exist, had their first tournament. So we have a bonus episode over there about that, but that's also partly why we're spacing things out more, is because we're quite busy.
With that, the first conversation that we have lined up for this new season is Jack Virju, and we're super excited to share that conversation with you all. So please enjoy. Today, we're joined by Jack Virju for our first conversation of Season 3. Jack began playing Ultimate in Seattle, where he attended Lakeside High School and won both Washington State and Western Regional titles. During college, Jack played for Dartmouth Daybreak, formerly known as Princess Layout, which won back-to-back D1 college national championships in 2017 and 2018. During his last year at Dartmouth in 2019, Jack won the Callahan Award. He has also represented the U.S. on multiple different youth national teams, winning 2 gold and 2 silver medals. Jack was the youngest player to ever make Seattle Riot and played with them for 5 club seasons and won a world club title with them in 2018. This summer, Jack is rostered with the mixed club team Seattle BFG. Outside of Ultimate, Jack teaches history at the Lakeside School in Seattle. Jack, welcome to Share the Air.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So we have a lot of guests that come on the show in a number of different ways. We've had people get recommended. We've reached out to people a lot, especially when we were first starting out. In your case, you listened to a couple of our previous episodes, and then you reached out to us about coming on for your own episode. Do you want to share why that was?
Yeah, totally. So as was kind of mentioned in the bio introduction at the beginning, I have switched from playing in the women's division where I played for a long time, and this season for the first time I'm playing in a male matching roster spot on a mixed team. And yeah, this change is really, you know, personally exciting for me. And also I kind of feel aware of the way that throughout my Ultimate career I've kind of like been in the public eye. And so even if my personal preference might be to just sort of, you know, slip kind of quietly between divisions, and it kind of felt like for a number of reasons that maybe that was not going to be possible. And that as I like come back to the Ultimate scene, wanting to feel like I'm speaking for myself and like talking about my own experiences and from my own perspective, and not to have other people kind of speak for me, or to just sort of thinking about the way that kind of traditional media outlets that are trying to like get likes or views or things like that, they're sort of incentivized to like have hot takes, or they're incentivized to kind of sensationalize things. And particularly thinking about the way that there's a history in the United States of trans folks in particular being like sensationalized by media outlets, is that it feels like really important to me to speak for myself. And then particularly knowing Tulsa and having been teammates in the past, having a conversation and sharing my experience with somebody that I already know and already have a relationship with felt like a really awesome opportunity potentially.
Yeah, I think, well, one, thank you for reaching out to us, and we're definitely want to share this space and make space for whatever you want to talk about. And I think kind of what you said about, like, it sounds like maybe in your ideal situation, you would just play in a male matching spot this year and just focus on playing and all that. Kind of feels like, what would it take to get there so that you don't have to think about how your story gets told and all of that? And it just, yeah, I guess I'm just thinking about, like, that feels like potentially a goal to aim for. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that the first thing that comes to mind is the fact that, to my knowledge, I can't think of any other trans men that are playing Elite Ultimate, like that are competing at the highest levels of the sport. And so in this moment, and this is, I also kind of mentioned this when we were originally talking, but it's kind of like visibility is a double-edged sword, where on the one hand, it feels like a really incredible opportunity and like a gift to me to be able to be somebody who's like visible and who's holding, you know, this identity of being a trans man really proudly. And then on the other hand, it does, I have felt at times like it's just a totally crushing weight, you know, and that I don't want to speak for this whole group. I don't want to like represent trans people or trans men. I just want to represent myself, you know? And so I feel like there's this just constant balancing act in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Double-edged sword is a good analogy.
Yeah, maybe before we get deeper into this conversation, we'll touch on this other point of naming that Tulsa and I are both cis women. And you've named even, I think, a second piece of us having a conversation like this is that you have a relationship with Tulsa. You guys have had conversation and you've had a little bit of trust built. Jack, you and I are sort of meeting for the first time. So that, in addition to the identities that Tulsa and I have, just want to acknowledge that this conversation can be additional labor for you in having a conversation with cis folks about trans issues and your identity as a trans person. So do you want to share your experience with this in having some of these conversations and maybe lay any sort of ground rules for this conversation?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I appreciate naming that and for all of us to sort of like be, you know, intentional about how we're entering this conversation. And I just have been reflecting on the kind of act of asking questions and how like asking questions is an important part of most conversations, but also like relationship building and asking people about their experiences and asking them how they're doing. And when you care about somebody, you ask them questions. And so there's that side of asking questions. And then also I think that a lot of trans people get invasive or overly personal questions, right? Often that are like really not about relationship building. They're about pushing people apart, ultimately. You know, and I'm really excited to be in conversation with you both and have it not feel like, it's not like a interrogation, right? It's just a conversation between people who are like, want to build relationship and want to know more about each other. And that keeping questions focused on like centered on relationship, right? Mm-hmm. Or like centered on the experience of the person who's answering the question, rather than when people ask questions that are centered on their own curiosity or their own ignorance, that those kind of questions are not about relationship building. And the other kind of thing I think that I was thinking about coming in this conversation is around giving definitions of terms or words or things like that. And I think that there's like kind of a false narrative that exists that queer identities and words are like too hard to understand. People are like, oh, those pronouns are so complicated, or those, I can't remember all the letters of the alphabet, like people who say stuff like that, right? I'm manifesting the world that I want to live in, where the expectation is that it's not too complicated. And the expectation is that people just learn the things so they can give people kind of basic respect. And so along those lines, not, you know, necessarily defining things if it could be Googled. And just like having a culture of, if you're like, oh, I don't know what cisgender means, I'm not going to define it, somebody should go Google that. And so that's sort of a norm that I had in mind coming into this conversation as well.
Yeah, I think that's great because I think it puts the onus of learning on the person who doesn't know to go and find for themselves rather than keep relying on other people to explain it to them. Yeah.
Totally.
And I also think the guidance of reflecting on a question you're going to ask, is this, what is the goal of this relationship building, or is this for my own curiosity, is a great guideline. Mm-hmm. So thanks for sharing those.
Yeah.
I wanted to maybe circle back to something that you mentioned earlier around being in the spotlight and like how that sort of being put on you is part of the reason why you're even reached out to have this conversation with us. And I am curious, and I think this is maybe a question for the both of you, is like what it was maybe like to have this sort of spotlight put on you and your ultimate career at pretty young ages. I think you both of you were these college stars. What was that like, I think, being in this media spotlight where it now feels like people deserve to know or have a right to know your stories and what you're currently doing with your careers and with Ultimate?
That's a great question. Yeah, I mean, I think kind of reflecting back, and like you said, I feel like I was relatively young when I felt like there was kind of media attention on my Frisbee career. And I feel like it was hard, and it was hard on me, and I feel like I didn't always handle it that well. And I think that there's something that, like, particularly for, like, a young person who's in high school, something about having positive attention on social media and, like, strangers liking things or saying, oh, you're so awesome or whatever, like, it is, you know, fills your teenage brain with all kinds of good, you know, neurochemicals, right? And this is, I feel like, why social media is so attractive in general, particularly for teenagers. But then, like, the kind of downside of that is that you're only really able to, like, be a one-dimensional version of yourself when other people are consuming you, right? They're, like, trying to consume media about you or words or ideas or thoughts about you. And so I think that I didn't really realize for a while what that would take away from, like, my own experience. And that I think that for a while, I didn't really yet fully understand the ways that that was affecting me and the knowledge that total strangers were going to, like, comment on my performance in a game. Mm-hmm. If I was, like, playing in a high-level game, and the kind of pressures that put on me and the ways that I think at times that I stopped losing my focus on being with myself and being with my teammates and just being, like, kind of there. And yeah, and I've always been, like, a relatively private person. And so right now I don't really use, you know, social media at all. And I feel like the older that I've gotten, the more that I kind of understand how the perceptions of strangers, how, like, being invested in that has a really negative effect on me, you know? And then I'm just, like, trying to live my life not invested at all in what, like, strangers think about me, you know, and instead to, like, invest in my real life relationships. But I do think that it's, particularly for a young person, it can be a hard pressure to just be handed, right? And not really know what to do with.
Yeah, and I feel like there's a little bit of, I've felt more conversation around how Ultimate players should be branding themselves and using their social media to build this image as an athlete, and especially pushed around, like, semi-pro now. And yeah, I feel like I'm good. I don't know. I agree with you. I feel like it's one-dimensional in terms of what you see from others. And then I think potentially a tendency to kind of fit yourself into that when you're trying to self-promote. And yeah, I definitely am uncomfortable with it and have not kind of, like, stepped into it because I have no idea what to do. But I also think my experience was a little different than yours, Jack, in that I played D3 and it was, like, few years back, so before a lot of coverage. My senior year, I think, was the first year that we actually had any games streamed from college nationals. So I think I, like, just barely made it through, which was great. But I do remember, I think Ulti World wrote a couple articles, and they were about me instead of about my team. And I think in all of my interviews, I was just trying to make it completely about my team. And I imagine the reporter was a little bit frustrated because, yeah, they were, like, going for an individual profile. But to me, it was a lot easier when I did have to speak to really try and focus on my team, center my team, and, like, remind myself that that's why I was there. I mean, I couldn't have been there by myself. So, yeah.
So, Tulsa, you said that some of that attention was difficult because it sort of detracted from the efforts that you felt your team put in to all of that success that the media was following. For either of you, did you feel that some of that attention affected your relationship with Ultimate?
I can start. I think one thing that I have been, and as I mentioned, I'm in this grad program for sport and exercise psychology, so it's a little more performance related, but I do think one thing that comes from increased kind of media coverage, and especially in a certain focusing on stats way, is I feel like I've definitely had to name that And I think in semi-pro too, there's a push of highlighting stats and goals and assists and blocks and stuff. And I feel naming that and recognizing that's not going to help me play well and perform well for my team, thinking about that, focusing on any of that has been helpful. And also I feel like it's a common trap that people can potentially fall into.
I think for me that in my kind of first couple years playing club and stuff like that, that I kind of learned to just like tune it out. And I remember one year on Riot, there was this discussion about boycotting the semifinals or not, because there was like maybe ESPN was doing the men's semifinals, but only one of the women's division semifinals. And people were like, maybe we should just be like, no, we won't play for you if you're not going to make it equal to USAU. Mm-hmm. And I just remember my teammate Serge being like, listen, I don't care about the cameras. Let's just go play in a parking lot. Not like a literal parking lot, but like that was like the sentiment. And I feel like after my first couple years of playing, where it was like, wow, it's so exciting to play in front of the cameras and stuff like that, I feel like that was more of the attitude that I had, that I was like, you know, whether we're playing the semifinals or whatever, if we're all on board, this is like an important game, that's kind of all that matters. But I feel like in the last couple years that I was playing in the women's division, I did really start to feel the media attention and the filmed games and announcers and stuff was affecting me more, because people started to like not use my pronouns even when I had told them what my pronouns were. That knowledge that people were going to not use my pronouns, that people were going to probably say things that I would feel like were uncomfortable or not representing me the way I wanted to be represented, then I really felt like that did begin to detract from my actual ability to play Ultimate and just focus on that.
Yeah, I remember that article you wrote. What was the name of it? Like, USAU, don't, if you're not going to use my pronouns, don't.
Yeah, if you can't print my pronouns, then don't use my face.
Yeah.
Where was writing that article and publicly making that statement, where was that in your journey with figuring out your place in Ultimates, figuring out what Ultimate was worth to you, and then the eventual decision to sort of step away from playing in the women's division?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think that in that moment, I was like going into playing college nationals for a fourth time. And that as I kind of became, you know, as Dartmouth had a lot of success in the previous years, and I felt like people were like using my image a lot or like talking about me in their like recaps and essentially profiting from my image and my play and stuff like that, as people paid to watch these stream games, that the kind of recognition of that. And then in the moment right before college nationals, there was some email threads about like, I was like both collaborating with people I knew on other teams about them wanting to have pronouns printed, and then USAU coming back and being like, you know, giving this very like demeaning, oh, well, you can't, you're not old enough to have your pronouns printed. And I'm like, you know, like 22 years old. I'm like, I know exactly what I want, and I want my pronouns printed next to my name, because people are going to misgender me. And this is like one way to like make that happen a little bit less. So I feel like in that moment when I wrote that article, it very much felt like this last minute. It was like right before the tournament. And I was like, because USAU kind of just gotten back to us with this statement. And so I was like pretty angry in that moment. And it's interesting to kind of look back, because I do think that a lot of people like read that article and that it did make a big impact in some ways. But that I like often don't really like do things out of anger. I'm like a very measured person and in general very thoughtful, and don't usually make quick moves and say things out of anger. And I think that reflecting on the article, I don't regret posting or anything, but I think that in some ways it made it easy to scapegoat USAU and be like, oh, like these people or this organization, they are not respecting trans athletes or queer and gender non-conforming athletes. When I think what that like allows people to like kind of take some of the onus off of themselves for like, what am I doing to make this a more inclusive environment for everybody to play in? And to be like, oh yeah, they're the worst, you know? So I feel like that's kind of one reflection I have about that article. But I also, after I wrote it, I actually heard from a lot of people. Like, my parents were at the tournament, and my mom said that like somebody came up to her and was telling her that they felt more comfortable in this space having read that as a gender nonconforming person. And that I heard from some people who were like teachers who were like sharing with their class, and they had kids in their class who are use they them pronouns and stuff like that. And I do think that in the last couple of years, I feel like using they them pronouns or really people's chosen pronouns on broadcasts is much more common than it was. And I remember that right before, I think it was before 2019, one of the people who commentates for ESPN was like calling a lot of the top players and called me and at one point said, like, oh, I wasn't sure if I was going to use they, them pronouns because it seems too hard for people to understand. And I didn't want it to be confusing. And I was just like, okay, like, I don't know. So, but I do, so I feel like stuff like that, oh, it's like too much, it's too hard. And I feel like we actually have moved quite far in the last however many years. And I don't know, watching some of the Western Ultimately broadcasts this last year, I was like, wow, this is like, you know, it depends on the commentator still. But some commentators like doing an awesome job. And yeah, so that's sort of my reflections on that kind of like moment in that article. But I do think that as my reflections on like my decision to ultimately leave the women's division was that I played that college season in 2019, and then I played the club season in 2019. And by the end of the like 2019 club season, I was just like so totally drained from like being in a place where I felt like in order to like play on Riot and to play in this division, that I kind of needed to like check my transness at the door and leave that part of me out of it. And that people wanted to be my teammate and wanted to compete with me, but they didn't want to like see that part of me or like do the work to actually show me that they respected and saw and welcomed my whole kind of experience. And it was just kind of everything from teammates still messing up my pronouns to like observers always being like, ladies tend to pull, which don't even get me started, but I feel like, anyway, but I feel like it was just like kind of this like constant draining on me. I was just like so exhausted by the end of that season. And that was a big part of why having a break in 2020, I was like, wow, being in other spaces, whether it's like at work or like with friends or whatever the situation is, where people like are gendering me correctly and it's not a big deal. I was like, wow, this is like how I deserve to be treated all the time. And this is like way better for me. And that as much as I love Ultimate and as much as I love playing on Riot, I cannot go back to feeling that way all the time.
Thank you for sharing that.
So 2020, everyone had a season off. And then 2021, you didn't play club, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sure. Do you want to talk a little bit about the decision to take that season off?
Yeah, so in 2020, I thought that I was going to captain Riot. And so we had like Zoom meetings and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. we didn't, you know, practice or anything like that. And then coming in 2021, I was still on board to captain and just like was also feeling like this really strong pull that I needed more space. And that actually it had felt really nice to not always be feeling like I was being put in a position where I wasn't being seen by people or I was worried that people were going to like not use my pronouns or like in other ways misgender me. And yeah, in like 2020 and 2021, I like got really into trail running and I was enjoying that and it felt nice to just like be really removed. And so I kind of ultimately decided that even though like for a long time, Riot had kind of been the most important community in my life and that, you know, I made the team when I was 18, I just finished high school and it was like, I had just suddenly gotten 26 siblings and, you know, big siblings that were going to like take care of me. And I was like, and this team has like really been the most important defining community in my life throughout the time that I was on the team. And the idea of losing that felt so hard and scary that I felt kind of unable to face that for a long time. Even earlier on when I was like, dang, you know, I'm trying to recognize that playing the Women's Division is like hard for me in these ways, but I can't not play for Riot. Because I would be losing so much. But eventually in 2021, it was just like the need to have more space and not be constrained by playing in a women matching spot, a female matching spot on a team, that like pull was strong enough that I was like, I just need space to decide and like not be so afraid of losing this community that I can't really check in with myself. Yeah, so I didn't play club last year and that like really gave me a good opportunity to be like, what is actually the best like version of my life that I could possibly live with no kind of constraints on it and to like center that. And then afterwards to be like, and does sports fit into that? And to kind of go at it from that angle.
I did see somewhere on some page that you ran a 50K race.
That's right. Yeah.
Whoa.
I feel like some people, when Ultimate stopped, were like, I'm going to go play disc golf. And I feel like I went, like, the opposite direction.
I'm just going to run.
I'm just going to run. Let's get all these Frisbees out the way. Yeah, so I got into trail running. I did two different 50Ks while I was away from Ultimate, which was super fun. Yeah, but I missed being on a team a lot. I feel like the, like, relationship of being someone's teammate has been, like, such an important part of my life that it was, like, really hard to adjust to not having those relationships. I really miss that. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so then this year comes around, and it sounds like in your reflection, Ultimate and teammates were still important. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that I kind of, like, had them to make the decision for me first that I wanted to, like, start taking testosterone. And that was, like, a really personal decision. It was so much bigger than sports for me. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I made that decision last summer, and it's been awesome, and it was, like, totally the right thing. And then from there, I was like, and do I just want to, like, keep enjoying trail running? But I was watching Club Nationals, you know, from my couch. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dang, I think that I do want to keep playing Ultimate. And at that time, I was like, okay, it feels like just a huge leap of faith, because I don't personally know anybody who has done this before, who has switched into being a male matching player, or switched into the open division. Not to say that nobody has done it, but nobody that I know or that I could talk to about it. But I was like, I think that as, like, scary as this feels, that it also feels like the right kind of challenging.
Can you tell us a little bit about BFG, or did you try out for any other teams? Was BFG kind of like, that's the team I want to play for?
Yeah, so this winter I practiced with a men's team for a while, like an open team, which was good. And then in the spring, when it was time for club tryouts, I tried out for Sockeye, Mixtape, and BFG. In addition to Riot, those are the teams in Seattle that are going to play at Worlds, and they kind of had earlier tryouts, and they're all really top-level teams. And so I was like, I would be totally excited about trying out for any of these teams. And I think that deciding in the fall and then knowing all winter long that, like, I was going to kind of shoot my shot in the spring, I feel like that was, like, a really challenging and also, like, included a lot of growth for me and my mental toughness as an athlete. And I think going from the fall, I really kind of had this mindset of my challenge right now is to, like, train hard enough and do well enough and play well enough that, like, I can be accepted as a man in these communities of men or, like, these teams as a man, right? And I felt like, okay, my challenge is to, like, prove that I can make it and that I'm, like, good enough and that I can be accepted. And that was, like, as you can imagine, like, a ton of pressure, right? To feel like, okay, not only am I, like, in my garage gym doing squats, like, I'm also, like, carrying the weight of, can I be accepted as my true self playing Ultimate? And I feel like the real epiphany or realization through this process was, as all good epiphanies are, it's like it's kind of something that I already knew, but that I wasn't like really like holding and living by. And that, like, of course I am already a man. I don't need to, like, prove that to anybody. Mm. And that, like, nothing that I do on the Ultimate field is going to make me more or less of a man, right? My own understanding and my belief in myself as a man, that's, like, what makes me a man. And I feel like so the challenge for me was not actually carrying this massive weight and, like, succeeding. It was, like, setting down this massive weight and just being, like, if I'm making decisions that are right for myself and then I'm proud of myself and how I'm acting and what I'm doing and what I'm striving for, then, like, that's it, right? That's, like, the challenge. And then I don't need to, like, solve sexism by, you know, and in my own play on the Frisbee field. Yeah, and so I feel like that felt like a really kind of important moment for me. And still, obviously, I really wanted to make a team, you know, mm-hmm. That was, like, good for me, but also I still had to, like, make these teams. Yeah, so I was trying out for Sockeye, for Mixtape, and for BFG, and I got cut from Sockeye, which obviously I was sad, but I also was not as totally devastated as I thought that I was going to be. I think because I had this kind of opportunity to be, like, a roster spot on one of these teams is not what defines me. Mm-hmm. And I also think that as like a queer person, I feel like I have been handed a lot of shame by society. Like, oh, you're supposed to feel ashamed of your sexuality. You're supposed to feel ashamed of being gender nonconforming or whatever. And I feel like kind of a long time ago, I was like, you know, I don't think I really need to like carry all this shame around. I'm not going to feel ashamed about this. And I feel like moving through society as a man, you're also like handed a lot of shame. And I feel like that's like a big part of masculinity is like what kind of keeps people in line is like, oh, if you're not succeeding at masculinity, you should feel shame, you know? And if you're not succeeding at sports, you should feel shame. And also you're not enough of a man. And I kind of was like, you know, I actually think that I feel like I'm supposed to feel shame about like being cut from a team. Oh, I'm not man enough to like beat people on the frisbee field. But also I feel like that is not something that just trans men feel. I actually feel like a lot of men are like put under that pressure of, oh, you got skied. And that's like a knock to your masculinity. Whereas like if you're skying other people, oh, that bolsters your masculinity. Mm. And I feel like, I'm like, you know, if I wasn't going to like carry around shame as a queer person, then I'm not going to carry around shame as a man, you know? So I feel like that was also an opportunity for me to be like, wow, I thought I was going to be like totally devastated to not make a team like Sockeye when I was playing on a top team like Riot, but also I've been like, lots of people don't make a top team like Sockeye. And yeah, and I also, I mean, it's been fun to play in the mixed division, which I've never played in the mixed division before. And I think that I have some unique abilities compared to other male matching players who are trying out for teams, specifically around having experience playing both in open male match context and in the women's division, going to like female match players. So I felt like I was like, okay, I can bring these skills to these mixed team tryouts. And particularly on BFG, I felt like the leadership of the team was willing to like work with me on what is like a good role, what's a good fit for like my skills. And it's different than it maybe was when I was playing on Riot. And there's like the mental challenge, but there's also like the actual on-field challenge of my relative skills compared to the people that I'm playing against have changed. I'm like a different type of player than I was before. Some of my physical abilities are changing. Like exactly how high I can jump is not exactly the same. It's like all these like kind of 10% adjustments in the entire, all of my game. So it's been hard, and it's, but it's been the feeling of setting down all of the weight that I was carrying about being misgendered all the time. I'm just like, wow, I have 10 times the energy that I want to like bring to a team, you know, that I want to be practice so bad, you know, as opposed to being like, okay, I want to go to practice, but also it feels like really hard to show up, you know? And so in that way, I feel like all of the like challenges really feel worth it for the ways that it like, that I feel like it's giving me energy now.
Good. That's so awesome cool. to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. I'm not going to go on any rant, but it's just like, why can't we just create spaces so people can feel like they get to be their full selves and like show up however they want and be excited to be there fully? I feel like a lot of things that you said were really, a lot of really great reflection, and I think reframing things and making me think about things in different ways. And I think the piece about like claiming how you identify is who you are,
yeah,
and like not letting whether somebody takes you on their team determine your identity. That is just like so empowering and hard. It's not simple. And also like, yeah, I'm just kudos to you. And I feel like you're sharing some really valuable lessons that cross a lot of different identities and things and everything. Yeah. So thank you for sharing all that.
Yeah. I was literally thinking that as you were talking, Jack, I was like, wait, that's how I feel like I'm going to practice right now.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like during the pandemic break from Frisbee, looking at some of the people, like whether it's like looking at Twitter or whatever and having some people be like, oh, I can't wait for Ultimate to start again. I'm so excited. I just want to go to practice all the time. And having other people be like, wow, I really am realizing the weight that being on my team or being in this community as like a person holding a marginalized identity or multiple marginalized identities. Mm-hmm. I feel like that difference to me was just so stark. And when somebody was like, oh, I can't wait to get back to Ultimate, I feel like I was like, wow, we must have really different experiences in Ultimate. Coming back, I'm like, I don't know if I can like pick up all this shit again that I was carrying. Mm. I was like, yes, I feel you. And I feel like we all need to like do better for those people, right? So that you're not like, okay, yeah, I want to come to practice, but like I can think of 10 reasons that I don't want to go, you know?
Mm-hmm. I feel like not everyone gets to just show up and play Ultimate. And I think a lot of people take that for granted. Yeah.
Share the Air will be right back. But first, here's a quick word from our sponsors.
Share the Air is sponsored by the National Ultimate Training Camp located in Western Massachusetts. NUTSI is the longest running Ultimate sleepover camp in the country. It has also gone international, hosting camps and teaching clinics all over the globe. With the most talented coaches in the world, NUTSI is teaching Ultimate for the next generation. Learn from the best at NUTSI.
Share the Air is also sponsored by BC Ultimate. BC has been producing custom uniforms and performance apparel since 1998. A company that proudly puts values and community before profit, BC is the world's best source for quality design and all your Ultimate needs. You can support BC and rep Share the Air jerseys by checking out our team store at bcultimate.com.
I'm sure you have a lot of thoughts. I wonder if you have any thoughts you want to share about the trans policies from USAU and then also WIFDIF particularly.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to think about it for a second.
Okay, yeah, I know it. Throwing it to you on the spot.
Yeah, I think what I would say is, first of all, I was a part of creating, when USAU created their new policy, which I think was in 2019, the end of 2019. That's when I was a part of the collaboration. And I didn't see it all the way through. I was more sort of part of the brainstorming phase. But they like brought together a working group of trans and gender nonconforming and queer folks. And basically, from the very beginning, all of us were like, people should just be able to play with wherever they want and whatever division they want with no restrictions. And everyone was like, yes. And we were like, great, let's like delete everything and just like write that. Okay, great. And then we were like, boom, we crushed it. And I think that it's like really awesome that that is like the direction that USAU has gone. Because I think first I would say that a lot of the conversations around, particularly we're talking about like excluding trans women from playing women's sports, right? It's like the hot topic. It's the culture wars topic. And that argument underlying assumptions and myths, the underlying myths about it are like, one, that everybody assigned male at birth is superior physically in all ways to everybody assigned female at birth, right? Which is just sexism. But that is a really foundational piece of anybody's argument really about trans people in sports if they're trying to be exclusive. And then the other foundational piece is like, oh, that trans people are lying or something, and that they're not who they say they are, like whatever, which obviously is just like overt transphobia. And there's really no argument for like restricting who can play where unless you're buying into those two ideas of sexism and transphobia. And so some of these like policies that like allow transgender people to play at all in the Olympics are like progress, because like they used to be like totally banned. And in some sports, trans people are like banned. And one of my personal heroes, Chris Mosier, the first trans man to be on the U.S. Olympic team for triathlon a number of years ago. And like, he's done a lot of work to make it possible for trans people to play. But you still need to like meet certain hormone requirements, which to me, in my mind, like we just have to like abolish that. And that there's so many intersecting oppressions. Like we see like not only like trans people being excluded, but like also cis women, right? And particularly black and brown women being targeted, you know, for like hormone levels, right? But it's just racism, right? And sexism. And to me, the ultimate goal is to like have divisions beyond the binary and for playing divisions. And in the meantime, just let people choose to play wherever they want. And I say like choose to play wherever they want. Sometimes people say, oh, to choose to like play in a division that matches their gender identity. But to my experience, I'm like, I played for a division a long time that didn't match my gender identity. I just chose to play there because that's where I felt like I would fit the best at that time. So people to play in divisions wherever they want and to like not have hormone testing, because humans have a range of genetic attributes And, like, until we are like, Michael Phelps, your feet are too big to swim, we cannot tell anybody else that their blank is too blank to play this sport. So that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Snaps to all of it, yeah.
I'd love to know what you're excited for with BFG. I know, like, going to Worlds and everything, but, like, what are some other things that you're maybe excited about doing with the team? What are you working on for yourself? Yeah, as you're coming back to Ultimate, what's exciting you?
Yeah, totally. Well, I'll just say that so far, my experience with BFG is that they're just, like, a really intentional and committed group, both to, like, being great Frisbee players, but then also, like, to bringing their best selves to, like, the team and the community, and, like, building a community that, like, everybody can, like, feel welcomed and seen in. And I feel like on any Frisbee team, there's kind of the situational bounds of that, right? In which, like, Frisbee is a pay-to-play sport, right? And you have to have the resources and time and energy to, like, be good enough at Frisbee to, like, make a top club team. And so I'm not to say that it's, like, that, like, any team is going to be, like, perfect at transcending those things. But so far, I've been, like, really excited about being on the team. And so I'm just really excited to be in that community and, like, have teammates again. Yeah, I just feel like being teammates with somebody is, like, such a special, like, bond. And that kind of the past couple of years, I feel like there's been this kind of, like, open question in my life of, like, can I bring my full self to a team and feel, like, seen and respected as a trans masculine person in sports? And I feel like the answer in the women's division was, like, no. And, you know, maybe that will change in future years, and that there'll be, like, more space made for like trans folks and trans masculine folks and in the women's division. But, like, for me, it was like, no, I can't both be on a team and feel like I'm bringing my full self. And this kind of past year, through the tryout process and, like, playing on a men's team for a while and in the winter and stuff like that, I feel like it's still been kind of an open question. And so to, like, make a team like BFG where they're like, we want you on the roster, with knowing that, like, my playing experience and knowing my identity and all this stuff, it, like, feels like an answer to that question. That, like, that's my hypothesis, is that, like, and we'll see how the season goes. But that, like, yes, in this situation, like, I can bring my whole self to a team and, like, be seen and respected and loved by my teammates. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm curious if there are any things that BFG does specifically, like, I don't know, like, specific conversations or activities or structured things that you have found really helpful or you would like more teams to do, anything like that.
I feel like it's pretty early in the season, and we've had, like, some kind of conversations about, like, equity and setting up some affinity groups and stuff like that. Yeah, I guess for BFG specifically, I'm not, I guess we'll have to kind of see how it goes and see what the team kind of does. I've been part of a Discord channel of trans Ultimate players, and something that somebody shared in there was actually Dragon Thrusts, their team website, in which they have their own, in the pursuit of gender equity, instead of using, like, female match and male match, they have their own words that they've come up with that I think are Nova and Scion, in that, like, it's better to say, oh, I need a female match player than, like, oh, are there any women who want to play on the line? Are there any ladies who want to play on the line? Right? Which, like, ladies, I feel like, again, that I could do without that word. But, that, like, they're like, okay, these are, like, two categories that are, like, serve a function in our team, but, like, language-wise, we don't need to, like, connect them to gender. And that it's, like, an opportunity for, like, non-binary players or players who are playing in a match and spot that doesn't match their own gender to, like, be more welcomed. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I would love to see the division move towards that.
Yeah, that's really interesting to not have to be reminded every time, like, female matching player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Like, can we just have a word? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't play a lot of mix, but in, like, some of the leagues and things I play, I think in the Northeast we use, like, DAOs and DOMs. Hmm. And I think it's still I think the intention behind it is good. And also it still means you're like making assumptions about who you are defending versus like identifying individually. Yeah. So I think I like that idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've found that being on a mixed team, I've just found that this mixed space that I'm in is a lot more willing or interested actually in having these sorts of conversations. Mm. I'm definitely curious. I'm also frustrated by why that is, why like the women's team I was on didn't feel as interested in having these sorts of conversations. And it's just kind of interesting that the mixed team I'm on is. Yeah, we actually have our first team-wide equity meeting tonight to sort of talk about the language we want to be using going into our first tournament this weekend. So it's not, we sort of have some things set for the language that we use internally, but like, what do we want to ask other teams to use? We want other teams to just use they, them pronouns when referring to any of us, just sort of be safe. But we're also like starting to have, and I think this is part of the cool thing this year, or like at least an interesting thing, is that I feel like, as Tulsa said, in the leagues and teams that we're playing on in the Northeast, there's a lot of push to using the sort of gender inclusive language that is, it's a cool push, and also it's not perfect, stuff like down dom. And so I think an interesting conversation that we've started to have on our team is, yeah, talking about how there isn't really a cookie cutter solution. There's no perfect solution to how to talk about things and how to, there's no perfect framework, I guess. Mm. And so we're finding ways to, at the very least, build our community, listen to our community, figure out what it is that the queer and gender nonconforming and trans people on our team need as like a stepping stone, and then building off from there. So that's just like, I think that there's been, with some of these shifts in like language and push to being more inclusive, I feel like there's a lot of jumping at like, okay, what's the right thing to do here? And I think that acknowledgement that there is not one right thing, probably the one right thing is what we sort of talked about earlier. It's building relationships with our teammates and listening to the needs of the people in our community. So it's been a cool thing in the last couple of weeks as we've put together this roster. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I love that. And I think just thinking about like people listening to the podcast and like hearing, you know, my experience and my perspective is that I hope instead of like ending it feeling like, oh, I know more about trans Ultimate Player's experience, I feel like, oh, wow, I knew like way less than I thought about trans Ultimate Player's experience and like so many different ways to be trans and queer and to interact with Ultimate. For me, switching into a different binary system is like, oh, that feels like affirming to me. But also like, that is not the answer, right? That it's not like, oh, people can just play in the one that they want to. We need, like you're saying, it's like, as my teammate, what do you want? How could we make practice more inclusive for you? What could we ask other teams to do or say? Yeah, totally. So I love that.
Mm-hmm. And I like that framing. If let me see if I'm getting this right. It feels like it's a framing of like, wow, I did not know a lot and I have a lot more to learn versus like, good, I got it. I know one person's part of a small piece of one person's experience.
Right. Totally. Yeah.
So I think you mentioned before, you talked about kind of the double-edged sword of being a highly visible trans athlete and some of the pros and cons of that. I don't know if there's any more you want to share there or anything you want to share kind of about what support your communities have been able to provide.
Yeah. I mean, I think something that kind of comes to mind thinking about visibility is just like the overt legislative attacks on the trans community. In some cases, using the avenue of sports to like attack trans youth often, and sometimes just overtly attacking trans youth and their access to healthcare and like gender affirming and life saving healthcare. And I think to all kind of trans folks, when we see this in the news, it lands super heavy, or at least it does for me, you know, speaking from my experience, because I kind of like understand the like weight of what it means to like have it be hard to access gender affirming care, right? Or to be in a situation as a young person where people are not respecting you, but you don't have any agency in like how to get what you need and find a safe space. And I think that the really high rates of self-harm and suicide among trans youth is just this devastating statistic that represents how hard it is to be a young trans person in America. And I think of that when I think about visibility and the urgency of fighting these fights to provide that life-saving care for young people. But then I also really think about making the differentiation between transphobia is challenging and tragic and really hard, but like actually being trans is like awesome. It's like fucking awesome. And it's amazing and it's totally a gift. And it's something that I like, I'm so grateful for in my experience in my life. And I think that sometimes when we talk about oppression against the queer community, there becomes this false equation, this simplification that, oh, being queer is tragic and hard and challenging. But like being queer actually is awesome. And that homophobia and transphobia and all these things are like what's sad. But I think, you know, people are like, oh, you know, say to their kids, like, I just want an easy life for you. I just want you to be happy, right? Instead of being queer, right? But that's the simplification that they're making. And so when I think about visibility, I also think about how like every day I get up and I'm living a life that is so awesome that I literally couldn't have imagined it 10 years ago or 20 years ago when I was a kid. That because of the lack of visibility, I didn't know any trans men until I was maybe in college. I mean, never seeing that, right? Or never seeing positive representations of trans people until I was so much older, I literally couldn't imagine. It never crossed my mind that the life that I'm living right now was possible for me. And I think that's both very sad and really incredible and inspiring, because for young people, your future is maybe so bright that it's like beyond your wildest imaginations, that you literally can't imagine how awesome it's going to be. And like, you just have to hang in there and make it to that future so that you can see. And so, yeah, that to me is like the urgency of visibility, right? Is like showing trans and queer futures in this moment of total crisis for the community. Yeah. And so I think for that reason that like, I am hoping to take the kind of opportunity that I've been given of being a talented Frisbee player who also is trans and who like maybe is coming into like, can hopefully be for somebody the vision of trans happiness and a trans future that like, I feel like we really, really need. Mm-hmm. So that's what comes to mind for visibility.
Yeah. I think I want to circle back to kind of something that I said in the beginning when you were mentioning like switching divisions. And I kind of think maybe I didn't catch it right, because it sounds like, and maybe, okay, tell me if I'm wrong, but maybe ideally you would want to switch divisions and be able to celebrate it and be happy about it and not have any of the negative conversation around it, rather than just like switching quietly, but being like, hey, this is where I feel great. Everyone celebrate with me, kind of thing.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I guess maybe there's a world in which there are so many trans athletes playing sports at all levels that it's just not even a big deal, mm-hmm. you know? And like, I think that's maybe what you're kind of getting at of, maybe it'd be awesome if this wasn't like a newsline worthy, right? Yeah. And that if there was like so much like public comfort with people moving between the many different boxes that we have around gender and sexuality and all these norms, and then if there was just so much more freedom of expression, right? Mm-hmm. And even to the extent that somebody could play in the men's division on Wednesday and the women's division on Friday, and it would just be not a big deal, mm-hmm. you know? And I feel like, and again, you know, ideally moving beyond binary gender-based divisions, but I think that this world, that it feels hard, I think, sometimes to imagine a world that, given the kind of pressures and rigidity and, you know, institutional and interpersonal commitment to the gender binary, but that I feel like the more that we choose to live in that world that we want to live in, you know, the like closer we get to it.
Mm-hmm. And I think continuing to push the boundaries of what we can imagine, because mm-hmm. I think that even in this conversation in the beginning, I'm like, oh yeah, between the two divisions. And now I'm like, two divisions, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that idea of beyond imagining, because when I think about, or beyond what we can imagine, when I think about cis folks or straight folks or people who are listening to this podcast and are like, oh, I want to like learn and I want to like be an ally and stuff like that. I really think about with gender, recognizing the way that all of us, every single person in society, is like hurt in some way by gender. Mm-hmm. And that we are all going to be better off the less that we are forced into gender norms, right? And into harmful gender norms. And that when we think about inclusion and like queer inclusion, it's both accepting and loving the full spectrum of humanity. And like, as we see it in other people, but it has to start with accepting and loving the full spectrum of humanity in ourselves, right? I think that society asks people to like hate the gender nonconforming or to reject the gender nonconforming parts of themselves. But that like, you can't do that and be like, oh, I love these queer people. But you have to love that part of yourself first. And then we're able to like love others more fully and accept them and see them. So, yeah, I do think that it's about this effort of imagination of what would it be like to live more freely and, like, less restrictively. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that we're giving people a lot to think about. Yeah. At least I have a lot more to think about.
Well, thank you, Jack, for coming on an episode of Share the Air. It was super exciting to have you join us for a conversation. So thank you.
Well, I feel really grateful that we had the opportunity to have this conversation. It was really wonderful to talk to you both. So thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. If you like the podcast and want to support us, here are a few things that you can do.
You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Share the Air Podcast and on Twitter at Share the Air Pod.
You can also rate and review us, and most importantly, subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen.
And if you want to show more support or you just can't get enough of Share the Air, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/sharetheair. If you're interested in repping some Share the Air gear, check out our VC Ultimate store at vcultimate.com.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at team@sharetheairpodcast.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks so much for listening.
Share the Air is recorded and edited by Tulsa Douglas and Luisa Nevis. It is planned and produced by Tulsa Douglas, Luisa Nevis, and Tim Bobrowski.
Share the Air's music is by Gray Devlin and Christopher Hernandez.
Finally, thanks again to our sponsors, Nutsy and VC Ultimate.